I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. 50 years ago this month, black and white activists boarded buses in Washington, D.C. and headed into the Deep South. That took a lot of courage in 1961. The year before, the Supreme Court had made segregation illegal in interstate travel, but the law was not being enforced in the South, and so those bus passengers forced the issue. They became known as the Freedom Riders. This month, a racially integrated group of 40 American and foreign students recreated the Freedom Riders' journey. Reporter Philip Martin went along, and he shares with us lessons those young Americans taught and are still teaching the rest of the world.
This is where Forsyth and Son Grocery was, right here. This is where it happened.
Ray Arsenault, the author of A History of the Freedom Riders of 1961, is leading a group of 40 college students on a tour of one of Alabama's most notorious sites. This place, just outside of Anniston, Alabama, is where 50 years ago, the Ku Klux Klan attacked the Freedom Riders' Greyhound bus bound for New Orleans. After slashing the tires, the bus was firebombed, which forced the riders into the road.
When I got off the bus, a man came up to me, and I'm coughing and strangling. He said, "Boy, you all right?" And I nodded my head, and the next thing I knew, I was on the ground. He had hit me with part of a baseball bat.
An excerpt from the new PBS documentary, Freedom Riders. Along this highway outside of Anniston, Zilong Wang, who was born many years after 1961 in Baotou, China, is thinking about the lessons of nonviolence practiced by the original Freedom Riders and how they might guide his beliefs and actions.
This is not just a healing of the past, it also shed light on future, not just the future of the United States, but also for China, because China will definitely go through a similar period. How can we use nonviolence and civil disobedience to bring meaningful reform into China's social system under the condition of social harmony and stability? I think we're learning a lot from them.
Wang, a philosophy student at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, is one of a handful of students chosen to board a bus from D.C. to New Orleans to recreate the journey of 50 years ago, along with original Freedom Riders. They also meet up with some other historical figures from that era along the way.
On the eve of the Freedom Rides, the president is getting ready to go to have his Vienna meeting with Khrushchev.
That's John Siegenthaler, who was an assistant to U.S. Attorney General Robert Kennedy in 1961. He points out the contradictions of that period. The administration was pushing for freedoms around the world, even as President Kennedy tolerated segregation and injustice throughout the Jim Crow South.
The timing of the Freedom Rides and the conflagration that he hoped would never come came exactly at the wrong time, came at the moment when he's not able to make the case with any credibility about freedom around the world. He's not able to convince the Soviet Union, look, free your people, let your people go. He's not able to make that case because it's clear that he hasn't let his own people go.
There was some awareness that the media was global and that people in other countries would be aware of the Freedom Ride.
Diane Nash was the leader of the Nashville-based group of riders in 1961. Her colleague, Bob Singleton from Los Angeles, said the Soviet leader at that time, Nikita Khrushchev, knew segregation was President Kennedy's Achilles heel.
Khrushchev was a good debater. Khrushchev was a loud, very vigorous person who knew history and who knew that the South was doing what it was doing to the black people. So he had him in a corner. And so we were his worst nightmare.
By his worst nightmare, Singleton was referring to Kennedy's. Singleton, Nash, and Siegenthaler all agree that the critical worldwide focus on domestic events in the USA helped to push the Kennedy administration into supporting civil rights. And those events included attacks on Freedom Riders at this Trailways bus terminal in Montgomery, Alabama. This is the eighth city visited by the students on Freedom Ride 2011. Here, Wang comes face-to-face with Freedom Rider James Werg, whose bloodied face peering from newspapers in 1961 helped compel hundreds of new riders to join the movement. Zwerg offers the college kids some pointers for their struggles, whatever they may be.
If you want to bring about change, you're going to have to go to the decision makers. I mean, in trying to change the movie theaters, it wasn't going to happen in Nashville. We had to make not just the managers, but the people that own those theaters decide to change.
On this journey south, Zilong Wang and his fellow travelers have also learned about the ultimate price that some paid for the advancement of human rights in the United States. The bus carrying the 40 students has stopped in front of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham. A bomb planted here took the lives of four little girls on September 15, 1963. Zilong Wang is only one of several foreign students on this tour of history and memory. Bakram Ismailov is studying at Eastern Oregon University. He's from Tajikistan. He equates some of the violence his country has recently experienced with the segregation of the South during the 1960s.
And it helps me a lot to see how much bigger and how much bigger scale it was. I can definitely relate this is to terrorism and actually putting a population of Black Americans in fear.
With the 16th Street Baptist Church choir in the background, Doa Dorgam, a Palestinian born in Kuwait who wears a headscarf, laments what she sees as the irony of past and present discrimination in her adopted American land.
The irony of the situation is here I am celebrating how 50 years ago we made great strides and to stop segregation and public transportation and discrimination, and then I'm in the airport and I have to go through a body scan and then go through a pat down. How is no one being able to see the correlation?
As the Freedom Riders tour winds down, students are asked what they will do with the knowledge they've collected along the way. Tanya Smith, who grew up in Haiti, plans to return there to lead a nonviolent movement on behalf of youth.
Just like the Freedom Riders saw the need in their society, you know, for change, Haitian youths realize the power that they do have and the stake that they do have in rebuilding Haiti's future. And I want to be able to show that nonviolence is more effective in the sense that you're able to do what you're doing without resorting to the same tools that your oppressors are using against you.
For the World, I'm Philip Martin, Birmingham, Alabama.